Welcome to Anaesthesia on Air, the podcast from the Royal College of Anaesthetists. My name is Duncan McMillan, and I'm a member of staff at the college. Today, I'm joined by Professor Malcolm Sim here at our Anaesthesia Annual Conference in Glasgow. Malcolm is consultant in anaesthesia and intensive care at the Queen Elizabeth University Hospital in Glasgow. He leads the critical care research at this hospital and runs a portfolio of investigator-led trials in high-flow nasal oxygen and sepsis. In addition, he's the chief investigator for a number of local or UK-wide studies and is the academic representative to the Royal College of Anaesthetists Scottish Board. Malcolm has just given his talk during the Centre for Research and Innovation session this morning on the subject of metabolomics and sepsis. Thank you for joining us today, Malcolm.
It's an absolute pleasure. It's been a great conference, and I'm very grateful to have been invited to speak.
Sepsis has often been in the news, and especially recently with the return to the House of Commons of MP Craig McKinley, and at our conference this morning, our keynote speaker, MP for Auckland South Perthshire, John Nicholson, discussed his patient experience, which began with an urgent admission to a Madrid hospital with sepsis. And there's Martha's Rule, which is a patient safety initiative prompted by the death from sepsis of Martha Mills. Given this, your work is very current, and so we'll step back from that and start with a definition of metabolomics for our listeners, and then connect that with its role in an understanding sepsis. So could you define metabolomics for our listeners?
Of course I can. So metabolomics is essentially the study of metabolites within biofluids. And these are molecules which are substrates, intermediates, if you like, of products of cellular metabolism. And they provide a physiological snapshot of what's happening downstream in your cellular metabolism. And if you like, they represent the molecular phenotype.
And how does that, in a sense, connect with the other omics?
So there are traditionally four types of omics described. There's genomics, which is the study of genes within your DNA. We've known about DNA for a long time. We can then move on to transcriptomics. And if you remember, during gene transcription, what happens is that the double alpha helix opens, and part of genes or whole genes are encoded in messenger RNA, and that's transcriptomics. And there's a whole science behind that. Then you move on from transcriptomics through to the proteins, which the messenger RNA encodes, and that's so-called proteomics. And then the end product is metabolomics. So these proteins make enzymes, and you have cellular metabolism, and we can measure some of the metabolites that are produced, and that's the science of metabolomics. So if you like, genomics is where it starts at your DNA level, and metabolomics is where it finishes. And as I said earlier, it represents the molecular phenotype of a patient.
How do metabolomics inform the diagnosis of bacterial infections?
So that's a very good question. What happens often when a patient has come to intensive care is that we know that your outcome from sepsis is worse. If you don't get timely antibiotics, you progress through sepsis, septic shock, and it's got a very high mortality by the time you get to septic shock. So by the time patients come to intensive care, they've often had very broad spectrum antibiotics. And this means that when we do blood cultures, very often we don't get an infecting organism. And if the patient is very unwell, and then we've given broad-spectrum antibiotics, for example, carbapenem antibiotics such as meropenem. And these antibiotics, there are no kind of more broad-spectrum antibiotics than the carbapenem antibiotics. So if we can do anything to actually get a signal that, you know what, the blood cultures are negative, but we've got a metabolomic signal that says, actually, here was the organism, and we don't need to give very broad-spectrum antibiotics, we can narrow our spectrum. One, it should aid with kind of targeting antibiotic therapy to the organism, and two, it may help us avoid using broad spectrum antibiotics as widely as we do just now, and this should hopefully have an effect on the development of antibiotic resistance.
Thank you. In your talk earlier, you described using an analogy connected to your interest in flying, with metabolomics helping to pierce through the cloud. Can you flesh that analogy out for us? How does it do that?
Well, yes, thank you for mentioning my hobby. I've been a pilot since 2005. I love flying. I love the challenges. There are many kind of similarities with checklists and attention to detail that you have to do in intensive care and anaesthesia with aviation. So yes, in the talk I did mention that actually sometimes it can be very difficult when you're stuck above the clouds trying to pierce through the clouds, and it's a bit like piercing the septic patient. What's going on? Are they definitely septic? What's the infecting organism? And metabolomics may allow us to do that. Up until fairly recently, a lot of sepsis definitions have been, and definitions in medicine in general, have been very syndromic based. So, for example, you know, for 20 years or so, sepsis was defined as a suspected or documented infection with two or more SIRS criteria. And more recently, in the third iteration of the sepsis definitions, as a change in your SOFA score subsequent to suspected or documented infection. Now, these definitions are very good at prognosticating. So, for example, if you've got septic shock, your mortality is much worse than if you've just got simple sepsis or an infection. But these definitions that we've used for years are not very good at actually identifying how you should treat a septic patient. So, for example, in my kind of 20-year ITU career thus far, we've tried various therapies against sepsis, none of which have been particularly successful. And that is because the sepsis definitions are for a very heterogeneous population. So there's a move now within sepsis to actually identify particular either genomic traits or other phenotypic traits that might actually better tailor therapeutic interventions. And what we've shown in some of our work is that if you have got a secondary bacterial infection in COVID patients, for example, you know, we can actually identify that using metabolomic signals. And that may hold for sepsis in general. We might be able to actually identify different subtypes that actually require a particular treatment rather than one treatment tries to fit all.
Give us a sense of how that then might impact on the patient outcomes.
So in the future, a vision that I have is that you come into intensive care, you've got septic shock, and you get a blood sample taken, and if you display a pattern of metabolites, a particular drug might be useful for you or it might not be useful for you. So rather than give one drug that fits all, it might be that you give a specific drug tailored to the metabolomic profile that you're displaying. And an example of this would be not at the metabolomic level, but at the genomic level. So work done by Kenny Bailey and colleagues in Edinburgh in the genomic study, they showed that if you have got mutations in your TYK2 gene, and the TYK2 gene is a gene which codes for Janus kinases, and it's these kinases through which interleukins and other inflammatory cytokines signal through. And if you've got a mutation in your TYK2 gene, you had a much worse outcome in COVID. And the TYK2 gene, because it codes for these particular enzymes, these Janus kinases are actually inhibited by the drug baricitinib. And during COVID, baricitinib had a very important role in decreasing mortality from patients who had COVID and were in intensive care. So there's an example of a genomic trait and a drug specifically tailored based on you know what you have genomically. And it may well be possible to do this at the other end of the omics, at the metabolomic level.
That's a picture of where we might get to.
Exactly.
How do we get from where we are now with the research that you're doing to that point?
I think there needs to be a bit of a sea change. I think omics research and a lot of research in general needs to be better embedded within intensive care. That's part of the problem just now. I think that all patients coming through intensive care, unless their families object strongly, we should be taking blood off. We should be looking at genetic and metabolomic differences, because that, can help better target therapies for the population as a whole. I mean, the work that we have done took a couple of years, a lot of money, and that was only for about 150 patients. But think of the power you could get if you had lots and lots and lots of people put into these sorts of studies. But that will only come if the sort of research is better embedded as part of routine clinical care.
So would you like to expand the size and the time period for your research?
the more patience you put into something, the better power you get, and the quicker you can do it. It is much easier to do these tests than it was even when I started doing the metabolomic analysis, ditto with genomic analysis. A few years ago when we first sequenced when the first human genome was sequenced, we can now do the whole genome sequencing very, very easily and relatively cheaply. So the more patients you get in, the more experience you have, the quicker you can do these tests, the cheaper these tests become, and the quicker you'll get results.
What would you like to do next in this research?
So in the research thus far, we have shown that if you have got a panel of four particular metabolites, that this had about an 80 to 85% specificity and sensitivity for showing that you had developed a secondary bacterial infection if you were COVID positive. And where we'd like to take that now is looking at viral pneumonias in general, be that COVID, be that flu, or any other viral infection that has made somebody come on a ventilator in ITU. And we'd like to actually do this on a much bigger scale to actually predict when somebody is becoming septic from a bacterial infection, so that we can actually better tailor those patients who we feel would benefit from antibiotics and those patients who we'd feel don't benefit from antibiotics. Because as I mentioned, overuse of antibiotics is one of the key things that causes resistance and development in new antibiotics. It's not really keeping a pace with the rates at which antibiotic resistance is happening. It's not so bad in the UK, but in some European countries, there's huge levels of antibiotic resistance to some of the big gun antibiotics such as carbapenems that we have.
Just taking a step back into your career in research and your interest in this area, give us a sense of how you developed that interest and your career path.
So my career path. Well, when I was a final year medical student, I wasn't entirely clear what I wanted to do, but we had a two weeks of anaesthesia at a Stirling Royal Infirmary, as it was then, and there was a fabulous fellow, a Dr. Crawford Reed, who took us all under his wing and showed us anaesthesia. I thought, wow, this is what I want to do. So I did my junior house officer year, as it was then. It was very difficult to go straight into anaesthesia immediately after being a GHO. I was encouraged to do a medical rotation. So I did the then Western Infirmary medical rotation and then started my anaesthetic training at Glasgow Royal Infirmary. Once I'd done anaesthetics for about 18 months, I got exposed to intensive care, which I knew nothing about, but I thought, wow, I really like this. And it was quite good because I'd done quite a bit of medicine before, so the two tallied quite well together. And at that time, there was Professor John Kinsella, who was very enthusiastic for interested trainees to do research. So I did my MD in development of novel scoring systems and their applications with Professor Kinsella. And then when I became a consultant, I got time through the NHS Research Scotland fellow scheme to do about a day a week of research. And at that point, I kind of developed my love for running clinical trials. I've always been fascinated with high-flow nasal therapy and also sepsis. I've always had an interest in these areas, and it's just really grown from there.
Marvellous. You touched on, a personality or a process link between anaesthetists, intensivists, and flying. If you don't mind exploring that a little bit more, what do you think is the connection?
So it's attention to detail. Flying, a bit like anaesthesia, a bit like ITU, you need to be well trained, and you need to be alert, and you need to be on top of your game, and you need to spend a lot of attention to detail. I actually think, although we're getting better in medicine, I think we could still learn a huge amount from the aviation industry. Particularly from their kind of simulation, keeping up to date, proving that people are up to date with simulation checks, I think we've got a lot to learn from aviation. We're getting there, but we've still got a bit to go. But I love the checklists. I love the kind of debriefing that you get in aviation that you don't get so much in medicine, every time you get a flying lesson, or even once you're a qualified pilot and you go up with an instructor for whatever reason, you always get, no matter how well you've flown, you get a debrief of that. This is what you did well and this is what you didn't do quite so well. And I don't think yet we're totally nailed that in medicine. We're getting there, but still got a bit to go.
So in terms of your work and the research, if there's one thing you'd like our listeners to take into their clinical practice or their research, generally their thinking, what would you like that to be?
So I think it would be a kind of general thinking thing. And I think what I would say is that the way that we've thought about sepsis is changing. The current set sepsis definitions, just to emphasize again, are really good at prognosticating in terms of, right, this is going to be a likely outcome because you've now got septic shock as opposed to sepsis, as opposed to a simple infection. But these definitions are not good at deciding what is the best treatment. And I think there's going to be a fundamental sea change over the next few years where actually we look at people's genome, we look at people's metabolome, and we actually tailor therapies specifically based on either your genetic differences or on metabolites when you come through the door in intensive care. That there's no kind of magic bullet, one thing fits all. It's going to be tailored precision medicine in the future. Watch this space.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much, Malcolm, for joining us today on the podcast.
No, that's my absolute pleasure. And again, thank you very much for inviting me to speak at this, what's been a memorable 3 days at the College of Anaesthetists conference.
Well, that brings this podcast to a close. Thank you very much for listening. And don't forget to follow or subscribe to Anaesthesia On Air to get all the latest episodes as they appear. Thank you for listening.